The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
It's a good show.
Hey, race fans.
Yeah.
Welcome to Whiting Wongs. This is Jessica Gao.
This is Dan Harmon.
And you're about to listen to episode 3.
This is a podcast where we have an honest, if awkward, and repetitive rambling conversation about race, writing.
And sometimes gender.
Gender, probably a lot.
Yeah.
I'm just anticipating that we're recording this on the dawn of like a 20-year actual gender war, like because of what's going on in the news right now. But that's why I said probably a lot. Anyways, what's this episode? What are we doing it? We talk about
Confederate.
Oh, right. The Confederate thing on HBO.
Yeah. And we talk about who is allowed to or should tell stories.
And this is an episode where I start trying to do a theme song.
Yeah.
It's also, there's a thing I wanted to edit out where I like try to improvise a Chinese movie, and it is, there's no irony to it, to the racism. I just immediately mention rice. I can't undercut that enough. But I have an epiphany in this one. I won't spoil it.
Yeah.
Nor will it make any sense to you, but it made sense to me, my epiphany. I was excited. And that's what I hope keeps happening. I hope shit keeps changing and moving forward, like that there's new like little synapses in our brains. I hope Jessica becomes more white and racist as the...
That's my ultimate goal.
And that I slowly become more shrewd, calculating.
Yeah, there's a finite amount of racism and enlightenment in this room, and so the levels are going to keep shifting.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to build a wall of friendship between us that you can see from outer space.
So enjoy.
Whiting Wongs is easy when you have friends. That sounded racist. This song should end. Welcome back to Whiting Wongs. I assume this isn't the kind of podcast that you just click on the third episode of. Maybe you do. If you did, I'm Dan Harmon and this is Jessica Gao, and we're TV writers with no qualifications whatsoever, no degrees. We're not politicians or psychologists or ethnographers.
I do have a fine arts degree. I want that to be well heard.
I dropped out of Marquette University in my freshman year to pursue bad improv and stand-up, and failed my way upward, buoyed by white privilege to a position of unstoppable power. You've probably encountered many of my hit content. I have efficacy and the ability to change the future for all people of color from my throne of white ivory white bones.
The third episode is the perfect time to give that speech and to give kind of a truncated resume.
And Jessica is a writer from Rick that I met on Rick and Morty, that we did the Pickle Rick episode of Rick and Morty, and it wove into because we were working together for that intense amount of time, and we started having conversations about this shit. What's racist and what's not racist, maybe to put a nice fine point on it, and with a little bit of emphasis on like how do writers, comedy writers, TV writers, like what are we supposed to do about it, what are we supposed to be thinking, what's white and what's wrong about.
that's a good summation.
And I've been thinking about, we're banking these episodes, so you probably have already heard our amazing theme song, but this is the episode where I'm going to come up with it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, the rest of this episode is just going to be Dan trying to come up with the theme song.
Because I got my GarageBand out, so I pulled up this instrument that to me, because I'm white, sounded Asian-y enough, because it was just called World.
this instrument.
The instrument is called World?
Well, it's like that. It's like you got a choice between guitar, piano, drum, and then
World,
and it's like a picture of like a weird sitar kind of thing. and there's like sub options or something, and I was just like, I don't know, this sounded a little exotic. So I thought maybe, okay, let's see. Waiting Wongs is better when you're with a friend. Waiting Wongs is better. Lack of racism to the end. Jessica and Harmon talking about race. Waiting Wongs is better if you're aware of different colored faces. Something like, well, it's a work in progress. Okay.
That was beautiful.
Yeah.
And a really good encapsulation of what we're trying to do here.
As I recall, at the end of our last episode, we started talking about this show. What's it called?
Confederate. On HBO.
All right. So, yeah, the only thing I wanted to say about that was, well, okay, like, I understand. I completely understand. And I know you're sick of hearing white people say, I understand, because you know a big butt is coming and whatever. But that's not how I mean this. Let's just have this conversation. Like, I feel like I can get, like, okay, bad timing. Like, if your conceit is, what if the South won the Civil War? But, like, I'm not quite connecting. Like, I think the thing that panics a lot of the people that are maybe, they're not just drooling idiots, and they're maybe not out-and-out racist, nor are they even totally ignorant. But at the same time, they're, like, such huge fans of, like, entertainment, art, comedy, whatever it is that they love, that they use to escape from the fucking horrible, shitty, joyless troubles of the world, that they get bummed out when those short, joyless, shitty, like, political things start having more of a say than their just simple TV loving brain has in what TV gets created and how that TV gets created. And I think that this couldn't be a better, bigger, brighter example, because it's like, we have this show called Handmaid's Tale that we're all enjoying because it's asking the question, what if the patriarchy was so in charge that it was just fucking plain and simple, truly as hard to be a woman as it sometimes feels, but in a real concrete way, like all women are just baby farms and they don't have any rights and blah, blah, blah. And we're exploring that and we're having fun in that narrative. And obviously no one said when that show was greenlit, this is an awful time for that show. This is a terrible time because women are, it's too true. It's too on the nose and all this stuff. It's stuff that you were saying about Confederate. So I don't know. How do you respond to that area of my white bumbling?
I don't think it's just about timing. I mean, the whole timing issue is, I think that Handmaid's Tale, it's perfect timing, but for something like Confederate, the first question is, who is the show for? Because this show is not being made for black people to watch, you know? Like, who is the show for, and why are you making it? Because really, it just seems like it's alt-right porn. It's, uh-huh, like racist porn. And, like, how many times, like, it's not even a good fictional work, because it's not like institutionalized and systemic racism is gone. We're not in a post-racial society. So you're basically just saying, what if racism is more right now? You know, like, we're living in a world where there's, like, open Nazi rallies.
It's still kind of one of the things I'm going to become a big fan of saying is, like, I'm so fucking sick of equivalence arguments and slippery slope arguments and all this any kind of fucking argument about what feels wrong to people. And I don't want to be cast in the role of, like, apologist for the status quo on this show. Like, we're going to have point and counterpoint. I think we're both liberal people, and I'm a tumbleweed that's going to blow in the direction of progress. And but I will sometimes play the devil's advocate because I don't want to walk around with unanswered questions. I just want to know the answers to them. So I don't know why I had to like qualify everything.
But, yeah, this is like an honest conversation.
But I'm just saying, like, so, but yeah, because when I hear myself say, actually, and but what about, and all this crap, like, I'm just like, well, I don't want this to, like, I'm not going to be passionate about taking that point. But this is a case where I just genuinely, without being a dick, like, if I was doing this to you on Twitter, I'd be sea lioning you. I just want to know, like, so, okay, so where does this, if we can get to a point where I can understand how this is different than Handmaid's Tale, because it's like, does it have something to do possibly with the idea that the creators of Game of Thrones, whose names are all over this thing, are two white dudes?
Yeah, absolutely. It has everything to do with that, because
so if it like was, if it, we can entertain the hypothesis of if it was like a prominent, like, or fuck it, like, out of the blue, we don't know him from Adam, but it's like a black woman and a black man and they're writing partners and they've created this show called Confederate, we wouldn't fucking boo it down, right? For sure.
Yeah, but I also think that you'd have a hard time finding a prominent black writers who, like, this would be the project they want to make.
Yeah, you know? I do find it hard to imagine that they'd be like, you know what, let's dig into that.
Why don't I dedicate 5 to 7 years of my life to depictions of, like, horrendous torture of my people on screen? Like, that sounds like a real good use of my decade. Like, what was amazing was 2 weeks after all this Confederate stuff went down that Amazon did the most amazing mic drop and announced that did you hear about this? They announced that they were doing a show where it was with Will Packer and Aaron Magruder of Boondocks fame. And it is going to be a show where it's a fictionalized, like, alternate history where post-Civil War former slaves were paid reparations and they were able to build up actually their own country that runs along America, and that they were able to build up their own nation that, you know, went through like 100 years of history,
like,
and
within the borders of the U.S. or like a Liberian,
yeah, like a piece. As I understand it, it's like, you know, a slice of America is like a separate country now.
And so they're kind of, and so you're fading in a world that has like all these weird, like, political kind of like tap dances to do with like an equal but separate black population.
Yeah, and also what would that look like? Because that's very interesting. Like, what would that look like? Like, that truly is like fiction, then, you know, and a good use of like alternate timelines. Because here's my question is, how come white dudes love like what would happen if, you know, if the South won? Like, that's always a thing. And
wow,
it's like,
wait a minute, where is that a thing?
I feel like that's always I don't see any white dudes coming up with a world where slaves were, after the Civil War, the slaves were given reparations and they were able to form their own country. Like, you know. Why is it always
sometimes I have to like pull your shirt and hold you back, like, because I'm slower and still focused on this previous thing, because I just want to put it like a ribbon on it. The Game of Thrones guys, like, they're white dudes. If they had pitched this Magruder project, now I know Magruder is black, is the other person black? So, you know, like, if for some fucking weird reason Aaron Magruder, who I've met and love, like, why did I have to say that? I've met the Game of Thrones guys too. If for some reason he was like a history buff that was like, and he wanted to make a point as the author of Handmaid's Tale did, like, by exploring, we wouldn't, it's a pretty easy yes. Like, we wouldn't have any fucking problem with it, right? We wouldn't picket Aaron Magruder's house and say, we heard about your HBO pitch, how dare you go there? Like, that's, I'm not trying to,
I mean,
I'm,
again,
it's just a gotcha
we're coming
question.
Into, yeah, but again, we have to then come back to the question of power, you know? Like, there's ultimately, like, this is the same answer that I would give anyone who talks about reverse racism, which is that ultimately it comes down to an imbalance of power. Like, who is in power in this system? And by system, I mean America, you know, Hollywood. Like, right. who is in power? And I mean, my real problem with Confederate is that I just feel like there is this sense of entitlement that every story belongs to them. And no, like the answer is no, like not every story belongs to you. You can't tell every single story you want to tell. Some stories don't belong to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really no argument. I think I'm just trying to put like a pinpoint on like what the, I don't even want to use the word crime. It's like what the faux pas, what the allergy is. The allergy is to two guys whose race is a known quantity. They're white. They've had their hit by adapting this novel about a fictional universe. They can tell any story they want. And the thing that is bumping and grinding people is that it's a combination of the fact that they're white and that this is not an area that white showrunners should go. People are saying like, can you not go tap dancing through that Pottery Barn? If it's a fun place to tap dance, maybe that's a bad metaphor now that I think of it. But if it's a fun place to go dancing and swinging your arms, we'll know that it's a fun place to go dancing and swinging your arms because a Native American woman will want to write it, or an Eskimo, is that even a word now? An Inuit person, or a just anybody but you guys and the silhouette you cut. That it, right? I mean, that's what
yeah,
we're saying.
Yeah, kind of. Like, I mean, basically, it's basically saying like, look, dude, like you don't get to tell every story that you want to tell. You don't own every story, and sometimes they're like, I think that's the problem is that white guys have been in power from day one, from the day they're born, they're always in power. They're in the position of power, and very few things are off limits to them. And so I think that it's very new and jarring when there's backlash and they're told, no, something doesn't belong to you, you know. And there are stories that don't belong to you as a white guy, and you have to respect that. And I think that's really what the majority, it's like, let people of color tell their own stories. Like, I don't think those guys are going to do a better job of telling the story of black people's struggles than a black person.
Now, forgive my ignorance, but is this show on yet? Has it been made?
No, but and that's an argument that people make, which is like, hey, like, judge it when you see it. But what I'm saying is this is not a story that belongs to them. So that's moot. Like, I don't care. They could be the most beautifully shot show, but it's not their story to tell. And I would feel that way if they wanted to, if they wrote a show about the struggles of like Chinese immigrants, like I would be like, what the fuck, dude? Right. Like there's no, you can do all the research you want, but you'll never know what it's like to be that person.
I want to, I have a spec script that I haven't let you read yet about a Chinese immigrant.
I would love nothing more than to read your spec script. With
this score. Oh, my heart, there's a voiceover. My heart is like the lotus in the rice. No, you don't want to say rice.
This is all in your script? Were you arguing with yourself?
Yeah, exactly. don't say rice. My heart belongs to Chun Fat, but he is gone at war now with the Japanese. I hope he comes home soon. And then there's a woman, and she's walking through a field. And the rest is just like dialogue.
I mean, at what point do they become like immigrants, though?
She finds out. She gets a telegram.
She gets a telegram?
Oh, you want me to flip ahead to page 20? Ching, 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 ching. Oh, God, that's unfortunate.
That's
a bell. It's a bell.
Flipping.
It's a bell. It's a bell on a bicycle.
Ding, 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 ding.
Telegram. Oh, God. Key change. He's dead. How do I stay poor in China?
Why would she want to stay poor in China?
She can't. The poor are eaten here. But my soul is dead. Look, I didn't do a lot of research. I'm a white guy. All stories are my stories. And then it cuts to like this. And then it cuts to the Statue of Liberty, and it's like fucking awesome.
So that means she traveled from China across America to go to New York instead of California?
Yes. I thought a bold move on her part.
Yeah.
What, do all Chinese immigrants have to just live in Portland?
Vancouver or San Francisco.
Anyways, maybe we'll edit that out.
I think there's a couple things I didn't like about it.
I don't like the rice part. I don't like that was in the riff. It makes an easy target.
But you corrected. Within the script itself, you corrected that.
I want this podcast to be a place where I'm free to kind of blunder around, but I don't want that to be mistaken for me thinking that, you know, whatever. Like, you know, the amount of anxiety I feel when we sit down to do this podcast is all the reason we need to do this podcast. Because I'm like, you have all this shit that you're able to, like, elocute valid or invalid. It's like the fact that, like, yeah, there's all this friction and distance, like, in our heads when we're talking about this stuff. We'll edit that out too, because all I did was just explain the point of conversation.
I like it when you mansplain to yourself.
My girlfriend, it's called dansplaining now, because I don't even give a shit about, like, I transcend all
gender
color
and race.
Gender. Like, I just explain everything to myself and everyone. All right, so I got it. I think we're just talking about a party foul is what we're talking about with these Game of Thrones guys. But one more thing. I don't want to pick this nit until it's boring. But one of the things that happens when we have these arguments as a nation, as an industry, whatever, is I feel like it's possible to talk about 8 different things at once because there is no, it's like you might have somebody like that is basically saying without saying it, or maybe they're saying it, don't let them make this show or don't let them release this show. Someone might be saying, HBO, I'm going to unsubscribe if you make the mistake of letting this show happen. Someone else at the exact same time might be in complete agreement with that person about how awkward and ridiculous it is an idea for these guys to make this show, while simultaneously only saying, I don't give a fuck if they make it or not. Let the free market like bear out. And those two end up having an argument about basically, you don't even know what the fuck you're arguing about. Because it's like we're pushing these buttons in each other. It because there's so much shit to argue about, because it's like, okay, so say that person was like, oh, let HBO make the show. I think I could say that your argument might be, well, no, don't let them make it, because that's money and real estate and time and energy and actors and just resources that shouldn't be wasted on this show. We should birth control this show, not let it miscarry. Forgive my metaphor.
Yes, that is what I think.
Did you like my metaphor, though?
I did. That was wonderful.
As a woman?
You know, as a woman, it helped me understand, because I don't think I would have understood it in any other way.
Thank you. You know, the thing about women is they love metaphors.
That's really interesting.
And if you really want to sweeten the kitty for their love of metaphor, go for birth. I always do it. When I'm talking to a woman, I want her to understand
That's
stuff.
The one thing that
I'm like, imagine
every
getting
woman
pregnant
understands
with this conversation,
of course,
and then it carrying it for. All right,
what I'm saying is, it is a bummer. It's a bummer that it had to go through multiple levels, and multiple levels of people were like, "Yeah, this sounds great. This is a great idea." It's a bummer that those two guys could literally make anything, get anything greenlit right now, mm-hmm. and that's what they chose to do.
Right.
And it's a bummer that so much money, resources, like manpower, is going to go into this, and it could have gone to some other cool project. It could have gone to if for some weird reason this was the story that HBO wanted to be told, they could have given it to 2 showrunners and creators of color to give their take on it, you know, and they didn't. Like, every step of the way, it's just sad, because when you think about the scope and how and the steps and the levels that this had to have gone through, you're like, nobody at any of those levels either thought or said anything.
I really am curious about that, and I don't know. Shit. That's my ice machine in the lounge. We've been displaced because I have an Asian on my show into the lounge at Starburns.
This is Starburns' Asian policy.
We're not allowed anymore because of some things that were said.
Starburns still adheres to the Chinese Exclusion Act.
I don't even know what that is. Someone brought opium into the recording booth last week is all I heard.
By the way, did you know that that is one of the reasons why, you know, the stereotype of like Chinese people always opening restaurants and like dry cleaners and stuff like that? Like there's an actual historical basis to why that happened. It's because like because of like the anti-Chinese sentiment in America during like the Wild West times, there were actually laws that prevented Chinese people from like owning like certain businesses, and basically the only kinds of businesses that they could get into were restaurant and laundry because those were women's work. That was women's work, and that was how they emasculated Chinese men, and those were like the only businesses that like Chinese people could get into, and that's why it proliferated, and then it became this lovely stereotype.
It seems to be like an American tradition, this sort of like hazing of the new immigrant, and because I've and look how lucky Jewish people were, because that what I had heard from Jewish people. So
take it up with fictitious, hypothetical Jewish people.
Talk to them about my ignorance. But what I heard, if this is inaccurate, then fucking like, yeah, I'm not surprised, but because I just heard it in casual conversation, but it resonates. In the olden times, when movie making was first happening, it was considered very low, shitty, like pornographic, not literally pornographic, but like, you know,
right,
what I mean?
It's an extension of vaudeville, basically.
Yeah, that it was like low art. And so that's a reason why, just trying to use my words carefully when I shouldn't have to, but you know, just that connection between the Jewish tribe and the entertainment industry is because and also shit like the, you know, the garment district and the jewel, the gem, like shit, like that's all because there were points in history where those things were the only things you were allowed to do. They were your only recourse to empowerment as a specific demographic. That's what I had heard from someone, and that's as good as reading it in the library.
Yeah, and we got fucking restaurants.
Exactly.
Laundry.
That's a kind of a bum break. but I think now that I think of it as the source is actually like probably one of the it's my very academic ex-girlfriend who I won't shame by naming because I'll just mangle all her very studious stuff. But she was a very insightful person. This woman I dated who she explained why like. You know, she would just go like, you know why all casting directors are usually women? And then she'd tell me some old Hollywood fact that would blow my mind and then I'd forget. But she told me that. And then another thing that she told me was, have you ever noticed in movies that Asian women are used to when you want to have a character who kind of a male white character who falls from grace, like, he can, and he's already in love with a pretty white woman back home. Like it's a shortcut to like, oh, his life fell apart. And if that includes him becoming, promiscuous and it's just with Asian women,
if you're asking if my pussy has healing powers, the answer is yes.
Oh no, I wasn't going there. I'm sure it does, but
I'm sure it does.
No, I mean that it's not full adultery.
Oh, I see.
That it's like Asian. There's a tradition with Asian women like, as like sex bots.
Yeah. Like he went to like sex school and she like healed, like the healing. Yeah, it's healing.
Yeah, the opium den where the white hero has fallen from grace and he's like recovering.
And she's like, hey, put it in here and everything will be better.
And he's like, yeah, I want to. Yeah. Anyways, I don't know. Whatever. I thought I'd get on your good side, but.
Yeah, I mean, and I think historically in film, like the role of like an Asian female character is always either like sexy lotus bot, you know, or like, you know, scary dragon lady.
But we didn't do it. Yeah, whatever. I mean, this is getting outside of our jurisdiction, which we don't even have.
We have no jurisdiction.
Anyway, but it's like, yeah, it's like you got that. It's like, oh, the Chinese people, they were allowed or only allowed to, like, with the laundry and the whatever, and the Jewish people this and the Irish people that. And it's like we use that. Then we use that. We throw that in the face of African-American people and say, like, well, everybody has to go through their little their little ups and downs. And it's like, that's pretty fucked up because there was nothing afforded that community at all. And so that kind of, like, combined with, like, this talking about this show, which doesn't exist and we haven't seen. And shouldn't we all eat shit if it's a great fucking show that has a bunch of black writers on it who are currently digging into this thing that they knew was a minefield, that they knew was going to be jeered, and maybe didn't predict that it would happen to fall right exactly with a fucking Nazi movement and a Confederate statue controversy, but that they knew that they were going to be that they willingly, and that because they're like, we're the Game of Thrones guys, we'll help you shepherd this, or it was their idea, or they were like, we'll protect you, like, so that some creator was like, I kind of want to dig into this, but it's a goddamn suicide mission on paper. And they're like, no, we'll help you. And then HBO's like, fuck, man, this is gonna, like, we're gonna look like pieces of shit and it's gonna be awful. And they're like, yeah, but we got to do it because we can do it. And that, you know, you fade in on the first episode and it just knocks your socks off and, like, somehow voices some, like, important dialogue that America needs to have because they have writers that happen to be people of color in the writer's room who are pitching stories and developing characters and exploring scenarios that couldn't be explored in any other context. And I mean, are we willing to eat that shit? And instead, because it's like, when, sorry, you talk.
Well, I mean, well, first of all, no matter what, the showrunners aren't black, and the whatever writers that they hire on the show, it was not their choice to create this show.
Did they create the show, though?
Yes.
It's not like they're EPing and someone else created
the
show.
They created it and they're the showrunners.
Okay. So they've got some passion for this arena.
Which is very weird. And so no matter what, like, no matter who they hire, even if they stack their roster deep, like, they're hiring people who did not choose to have this show come into existence, you know? And at the end of the day, why is it these two guys who have to tell this story? Like, if your argument is like, well, what if their team is so good that they actually make this a good show? Then why didn't that team create the show? Why is it that these two guys decided that this is the weird fucking, like, passion project that they want to do, and then they then had to rely on other people to give it authenticity? Like, tell your own fucking story, you know? Let people of color tell their own fucking story and let them choose what stories go out. Like, why does this have to be your hill to die on? I would love to, and also, I don't think it's tone deaf just because of the timing, like, that there's a Nazi rally. Like, I think that even if there wasn't a Nazi rally, I think even if Trump wasn't president right now, this is still not a good idea. Like, it's just not a good idea because no matter what, the story does not belong to them. And, like, there's no other way for me to look at it in that sense, you know, because all of television history is, like, white dudes in their 40s who have success being like, now this is the story I want to tell, and you know, hundreds of people jump to it to make sure that this story that I want to tell, like, comes to your television screen.
Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, the way here's my brain's process. If I can break down the flow chart, when I hear only that information, which is all the information I have, I don't know, I haven't seen the show, I don't know anything about what stage of production, whatever is going on. I hear the headline. So here's the flow chart of my brain as faithfully as I can relay it. Reward my candor. My first thought is, eesh.
cartoonishly tug on your collar.
Yeah, like, the hand goes to the collar, and the Johnny Carson goes, oh boy, not a good time. And then I guess the next spot on the flowchart is, like, and I shouldn't call it a flowchart because there's really no decision there's no logic gates. It's just like, it's just the layers of the of things that are happening to me. I go like, well, because that's such a, because that's the automatic reaction. And I agree with you, kind of regardless of current affairs, really, it's just kind of an odd, such a, it's a weird choice that you can't really track.
Yeah.
I would track, if you told me that Alex Haley's grandson was a screenwriter and it was a history buff and he was fascinated with the Civil War, and it was I would go like, oh, we'll see if that's a good or a bad show, but I'm not confused about any of it. But yeah, no, I do. I am confused when I hear the headline, and then I go, okay, and this may be where the breakdown happens. Maybe this is like the clearest expression of like atomic level white privilege that we'll hear in this episode, is like, then this miracle happens in my brain where I go, well, because that sounds like such a party foul, and because they created Game of Thrones, they must have something up their sleeve, or there must be something more to this. I should give this more consideration. I shouldn't pick up the phone and demand that someone ban something. And I think that, you know, trying to read your mind, I'm like, I think that's the spot where a disconnect, because we're not,
but where we diverge.
Where we diverge,
yeah,
because of privilege, because, and I think this is ironic, it's like, I'm kind of being told, when people are talking about my privilege, I'm sort of being told that I'm in charge. I'm mm-hmm. sort of being told that it's my world and I kind of control it already. And I'm like Optimus Prime. I have to make different decisions than Bumblebee, and I have to make different decisions than Wheeljack. Wheeljack is like kind of like the mechanic of the Autobots.
Thank you for dance-planning that.
And in the cartoon, he had kind of an Italian descended East Coast accent, because he's a robot from outer space that works on cars. So he talks like Mario.
He's from the New Jersey of outer space.
And Jazz, it was fucking Jazz. Jazz was Scatman Crothers, because his name was Jazz.
I remember Jazz.
And that's unfortunate, but now through a modern lens, but hey, diversity, even among robots. Who says robots are white? Who says Scatman Crothers is black if he's voicing a robot? Well, this is the next episode.
Is the next episode, because then we have to get into Long Duk Dong if we're going to get into that.
So here I am, this Optimus Prime, like, of the Autobots, which is our multicultural society. I'm in charge. I have to make difficult decisions sometimes. I'm white. I'm Optimus White. And I run everything, and I have nothing but privilege that I can kind of like, I need to make, I, it, it's, if I decide to be selfish, even if I simply make the non-decision to kind of forget that there are different kinds of people in the world, evil starts to happen, even just through my neglect, like, let alone the idea that without my action, things are going to be really hard to change, right? Like, I'm not saying that's the case, and I'm not even saying that's what people are saying. I'm saying that's sort of that's a flavor of the conversation when I'm getting woke, right? Like, when my power is being truthed to, feel like I'm being told that that's what the case is. And then simultaneously, while I'm being told that's the case, comes the equally valid things of like, no one wants to hear your fucking point of view. You're mansplaining, you're dansplaining, you're whitesplaining, you're Europe-splaining, you're Optimus-splaining to the Autobots what needs to be done and how to do it. And so I think I have no problem with any of it because I've been alienated my whole life, and I hate myself, and I have always felt too lucky, and at the same time I hate everyone for not appreciating my genius. I'm so compatible with all this shit because of its contradictions, but I then go, oh, I can see why like a 90 IQ white guy would be blowing a fucking gasket, because he doesn't know what he's supposed to do.
Well, also, he can't separate the difference between systemic privilege and like individual anecdotal privilege. Because, you know, it's like if he's some dude who like comes from like a poor family and like just can't catch a fucking break, he's like, how dare you say that I have it better, easier than other people? Like, I fucking suffered and my whole life has been struggle.
It's a tough thing to hear. Like not as tough
as experiencing racism.
And just to get back to that divergence, to complete that thought, that is that point of divergence is when the let's call him the white dude, so you've just heard about a civil what if the Confederacy won the Civil War being greenlit, HBO is gonna think, and that you get that far in the flowchart, and the white guy, if he's me, goes like, therefore in this syllogism there must be something more worth discussing here, because I'm Optimus Prime, and if I also say this show should not exist, then I might kill a show on accident. If I weigh in, my God, like, I need to take my weighing in very seriously. I'm Optimus Prime. You have the privilege of being like, I don't give a fuck if I'm white or Wong. I'm not being sarcastic about this. You do have that. You should get to be like, fuck you, I don't want to hear your fucking
because it's, you know what it is, it's hard for you, and by you I mean white dudes, to hear like, fuck you, I don't care about your opinion, because the world cares about your opinion. This whole country is built on your opinion, you know, and it's very hard to be told, like, for the first time, you know, when you're not used to it, like, your opinion doesn't matter, this is not a conversation you're allowed to be a part of, you know. It's hard to be excluded in a world where the world was made for you.
Uh-huh. You see, I think this is like a light bulb moment.
Yeah, because
what I'm hearing is like, oh yeah, because what I was about to respond with is, well, yeah, well, what about all the white people that didn't create a show about Confederacy reigning? Don't you realize that we have to either approve or disapprove of this show? Because if we approve of it, it happens, and if we disapprove of it, it doesn't, I think is the unspoken maybe assumption, and that maybe the light bulb that for me is like, oh no, and maybe it has nothing to do with you. Maybe two people who look like you and who also work in television are having this difficulty and their production office is being swarmed with picketers, and maybe you don't need to pull out a bullhorn from the back of the crowd and go, attention everybody, I'm also white. But not in that building, and I have a few things to say about this as well. It's like that what you just said, that was like, aha, I was like, maybe you're not invited to the conversation.
Yeah, like, you don't have a seat at every single table, and that's the mistake.
Because the conversation is whether or not something's racist, and you're white.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I mean, like, Kumail Nanjiani said on my podcast once, like, I don't know, I was in some, like, self-loathing, like, tailspin, and I was like, I don't know, Kumail, do you think I'm racist? And Kumail said, if it's up to me, not racist. But it's not up to me. and I was like, that's awesome. I'm going to work on my Kumail impression.
And here we are today with this pitch perfect Kumail impression.
But it's not up to him, and it's also not up to me, and it's not up to any one individual, and it's also not up to really any one demographic. It's certainly not up to white people, and it's not up to any white individual, and it's not... There may be an anxiety here that, like, it's you know, maybe part of the problem that we're having, the breakdown we're having, is that just it is like, I think maybe people of color and white people both need to realize how much fucking unspoken assumption like white people have that their word means more, that they're a majority, that they're,
well, white people act like being called racist is worse than being a victim of racism.
Well, yeah, honky means nothing. It's like a joke. There was this bartender at the Drawing Room who passed away, Mario, God bless you wherever you are, who told me this joke of like, yeah, you can call a white guy a cracker, you can call him honky, peckerwood, he won't get offended, just don't call him racist.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mangled his joke, but I laughed because it was so fucking true. It was like, if somebody calls me racist, oh my god, those fighting words, you piece of shit, you fucking minority piece of shit. I'm gonna take my white fists and pound you in the face. Don't you ever call me racist, you worthless garbage. I was born to lead this planet. I'm a little more comfortable now because I felt like it was kind of like a therapy session where I'm like, I mean, you are you seeing now that, yeah, you're gonna laugh because you're like, am I seeing it? That what everyone but you sees, that I was like, I have like this anxiety about like running the world that I didn't even realize I have. Like, where I'm like, well, wait a minute, hold on now, Starscream, Missile Nugget. He's a Decepticon, Starscream. I know I fucked that up. I don't want your shitty emails.
No, but this metaphor makes sense because I'm Starscream because you see me as the enemy. I get it.
No, not true. No, when we're having conversations about race and privilege and all this stuff, I think that's part of the argument is that no, it's not about Decepticons versus Autobots. It's all about this like interdepartmental Autobot meeting and these different shaped and colored robots are saying to the big red truck that's in charge of everything. I gesticulate with my hands a lot, and whenever I do, you're always looking. Are you worried that I'm gonna like throw something at you, or
no? Because I look at it because there's movement.
Oh, but you know? But that makes me feel like I'm like you poor thing. Like you don't want to be in a conversation with me. My hands are never gonna stop moving, and they will never be important. I'm just constantly groping and grabbing at the air and like what.
Well, you know, like if somebody points to something, you naturally are gonna look at it, and so it's that movement that makes me pay attention to it.
I wonder if I look at people's hands when they're,
I just look at any movement, you know.
I don't
are you testing this theory?
Yeah,
he's shaking his hand but only in one spot.
and she knows that yeah, so it's probably not, you're not a cat. Okay.
Yeah, we've established I'm not a cat.
All right. Well, all right. So, yeah, no, that was good, though. I feel like we kind of, that's what I want to do all the time is kind of resolve shit. But I also don't want listeners to be like, what fucking resolved it? No, she's wrong. He's wrong. Whatever. Like, no, we're not. I just, look, this is about
understanding.
I like when we had that conversation, I kind of walked away from it going like, yeah, you know what? Not my problem. Not my fucking problem. And not Max Landis's problem if fucking... I mean, I knew that. I'm like, Max, why are you...
Yeah, talk about somebody who doesn't understand. They don't have... They're not invited to the conversation.
Yeah. It just seems like... Well, it's hard because we have a culture here. We're all invited to every fucking conversation. There's a goddamn comment section of every fucking thing. But that's different from actually, you know, what we're talking about, which is where it's like you're not in the role of referee. That's what not, I mean, being some, in the conversation.
Sometimes you should be in the audience only.
Right? So you can like, yeah, just like, I don't know, like you can just watch, yeah. Like you're just it's not up to you. It's that you're white people aren't in charge of how racism works. Like they're
I mean, they kind of are. They kind of completely are.
I think that's like a whole, that might be a separate podcast, let alone a separate episode, but do you think
multiple podcasts but all about race?
I used to believe in my heart this is why I'm a race traitor, because I used to believe in my heart the most racist thing of all, which is that white people are just kind of inherently, we kind of got it in our, like, that we're kind of good at it, like categorizing and looking.
Oh, at being racist?
Yeah. That we're just kind of, we have a talent for it genetically.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true because you've had, like, you know, thousands upon thousands of years of being able to perfect it.
But my conversation with my black friend, la-di-da.
I just want it on record that there's no proof that this black friend exists.
No, we can get, we'll get him on the phone. Brandon Johnson, ring a bell. Mr. Goldenfold from Rick and Morty. He and I are always, you know, like we're the same age, and so like
you can't ever cite a black friend if you employ them.
Well, what if I tell you he's my employee because he's my friend? he's all bummed out that he didn't. No, he also earned his job.
He's very good at Goldenfold.
Everybody knows that. So, but like, no, we've been friends for a long time, and I wouldn't say we're like chums that are like we don't go hunting together. But I don't. He doesn't come over and play video games with me. But at the same time, when we see each other, we're very happy, and we almost immediately start talking about race, and I like to think it's mutual. But I because I do have other black friends that are clearly bummed out that I always want to talk about race.
Do you have other Asian friends?
Not. I mean, I don't want to offend any of them if I do, and I'm forgetting that they're Asian because that would be the ultimate irony. Because
you don't
racist.
See color,
yeah, and then I'd be offending them.
Oh boy.
So we'll figure it out later.
Oh boy.
But I doubt it.
That smug little
Is it? I don't trust them. I don't know if that's
because you don't trust them around open containers of Coke.
I had a conversation with him a couple months ago. We were like at an airport. We were going to a Harmontown gig, and I finally fucking changed my mind like 45 degrees because I was like. I was like, do you think all white people are racist? Do you think we're just kind of born that way? I kind of confessed my theory to him. I was just like, I think that honestly, it's just like we're fucking like genetically kind of like we're descended from some weird like breed of human,
like racism genesis seed
that we're kind of like. I talked to like this kind of kooky anthropology student at a party a million years ago, and I while I recognized that her theory probably wasn't scientifically valid, I thought it was an interesting model of thought, which was she was pitching this whole idea that like what we call white people are actually like this sort of drip pan of like that all of the races that white people label races are like kind of the only reason they're identifiable to white people is because white people consider themselves the thing, the default. But the irony is that the reason we do is because we're the descended from basically this like nomadic, like involuntarily nomadic kind of Paleolithic tribe of white people who are basically like, we're like a mishmash of people that were kicked out of every race, kind of as like the cartoonish way of putting it. I'm all over the place.
Are you trying to say that you're like the Avengers of white people, white people?
No, it's more like we're like the you make the cookies and then there's like the extra dough on the outside that's not shaped like a person, and then you take all that cookie dough and you throw it into a bowl, and then that dough like took the form of people and was like, we're the fucking masters. Because look how much like a cookie person you look like. You're fucking so insanely specific. I could, like, look at my beautiful, like, generic kind of features that are almost as if you combined all of them. I don't buy it scientifically, but I just thought it was an interesting way of looking at it this was my lead up to say, I've been walking around with this feeling, this like, you know, typical liberal, cucky, beta, self-loathing, like progressive thought that, like, you know what? White people are like, they're born like, they just got this gene in them that's like, they're just like good at recognizing categories of people and like immediately looking down on them or something, that we have some kind of like weird ability. And I don't believe that anymore because Brandon's like smarter than me and is like more into history and has thought about this from his perspective and was like, no, He said, like, no, it's just, it's like, we don't understand that there was a, there's times and places where, like, if you have an orange, you're rich, you know, like in history, because it's like orange trees don't grow somewhere. Like, we don't realize as modern people that we're descended, all of us, from tribes of people who all had one thing in common, which is that life was fucking hard and it was, food was scarce and resources just felt like, if you had a cup of water that was drinkable, or you had a tree that grew fruit, like you had something that, could be taken from you and that, or that you could give to someone else. And it's, and there's, we are all the same, and we have these cosmetic differences that are based on slight environmental deviations, depending on where on the earth your ancestors are from. And but there is no propensity for hatred. There's no such thing. There's nobody that's better or worse at that. If you switched circumstances with the push of a button, where Chinese women had privilege, you know.
Yeah, and that's what I'm working towards every single day of my life.
You'd be abusing it, possibly.
I absolutely would be abusing it.
And so, give me a break, will you?
No. You'd be the first to the labor camps. They would march you past me and be like, this guy says he knows you and you can vouch for him. And I'd stare at you, make direct eye contact, and I'd go, I've never seen this man in my life.
And I wouldn't even feel betrayed, because I wouldn't know it was you.
That's the best response I could have ever imagined.
Like, that brunette lady with such a meanie. Didn't we have that joke? Or was like, I'm in front of the firing squad, and that we're after the Asian women have taken over, and
I think just Chinese people have taken over.
And it's like, ready, aim, and then wait, no. And then you come running up and you like do this big speech about how I you know, you worked or wait, no, like, or that how I deserve a chance or something. Not specific. And then I'm like, thank you so much. What's your name?
Yes.
I'm Dan. I didn't know you were a fan.
I didn't know they got Rick and Morty in China.
This is a fucking fascinating stratosphere that I've gotten into. So here's the thing. I'm starting to, because I'm always wondering, like, why would you bother to take the racist side if you're white? My racist brethren, maybe all they're thinking is, maybe they're actually like straight up like in tune with the non-racist reality that all people are truly the same, and they're saying, yeah, and if the shoe was on the other foot, you'd oppress me, and you'd like take all the food you could get, and and it's like, we're being kind of cool about it considering we won. Like it's like simultaneously the most like kind of vile thing you could say, but ironically the root of my progressiveness is actually more racist, because I'm first and foremost thinking like, man, us white people, we sure are good at being Nazis. I gotta compensate for that. And it's like, wait, so racist, like on so many levels. And then the actual Nazis are going, or maybe not the actual Nazis, because they truly literally believe in a master race, but like your average person who has like racist kind of policies is doing it because they're like, hey, this is a game of Monopoly, and like Chinese women are just as they're gonna fucking take over if we turn our backs on them, so let's try to figure this out, sure, but I don't want to end up in a camp for white people. Those Chinese women are good.
Well, I mean, the weird thing about this hypothetical is that it's not taking into account whether or not the world that you're born into as a white person is the same world that we inhabit now, which is a world that has a history of white people being in power, of like colonialism and imperialism, and how the system is completely stacked for you and against everybody else, you know, because I think that that really shapes how you view the world and how you view yourself in relation to the world when you're born into a world like that. When you're born into the world where like everything invisibly is in your favor, like how does that shape you as a person as you move through this world?
It makes you pretty fat, I'll tell you that. And it should make you happy, but
But it it definitely makes you more defensive when people point it out, because then you're like, how dare you? I did everything on my own.
Yeah. I mean, because relative to you and your world, you did. Like, I just...
Sure,
I,
anecdotally,
yeah.
you did.
We've said that... We've been on this. Like, yeah, my fucking, like, you know, like I sound like the world's snootiest self-righteous activist when I'm talking about the Yale guys and the Harvard guys and the, you know, that I work with in network TV, and I'm like, you fucking, like, you know,
I guess that's one thing that white people and Chinese women can agree on, which is that Harvard Lampoon people are insufferable.
Well, that's not, wait a minute. I didn't say that. And as Optimus Prime, if I say that, it's true. No, I mean, I learned that I was wrong about that. You know, like, I don't resent people that were, that got to go to, I mean, yeah, fucking The Simpsons is great because Sam Simon hired a bunch of Harvard Lampoon people, and like they defined comedy and stuff. I don't think that everyone that went to an Ivy League school is like a phony. I think that also it's like,
no, it's just a very specific type of humor, and I feel like a higher percentage of them seem to be the kind of people who like to smell their own farts.
Well, you know, I mean,
do a scientific study and prove me wrong.
I'm not gonna betray my race that much. I'll do it enough to get some points with the public, but not enough to, I'm not gonna piss off the Illuminati. Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, I don't. I actually just feel bad about how frothing at the mouth I was about Ivy League guys when I got out to L.A. and was like, you know. And I just think that I was, like, misguided. Like, it's just dumb to categorize people. Like, is the lesson that I need to learn. It's not the lesson that you need to learn. Like,
yeah, because I still happily shit on Ivy League guys.
You're going to survive better and probably move the world more forward by learning to be more close-minded and categorize people better, because you can learn to be cautious of, oh, this category of person keeps saying this and doing that, and whereas if I keep doing that, I'm kind of holding the world back.
I'm just running the clock until my people take over the world.
I know this is Whiting Wong's and the implications that it's only race, but that is another thing which is like thematically related, which is My girlfriend Cody was going down this rabbit hole on the internet of all these like different kinds of misogynists, and like it seems like there's like a river underneath the misogyny that really has to do with something kind of relatable to me, which is the fear of women and their power, that we are saying like that women, much to women's confusion, men, when they hate women, are saying, yeah, but like, I'm just a drone you're the meaning of life, and like, that's not fair. Like, you can destroy me with an eyebrow and an invitation to your birthday party. And like, it's been that way since the beginning of time. And I'm just trying to take a little back. And women are like, take what back? You have everything. But men are like almost biologically kind of like, we're inheriting like this, like fear of women, that it doesn't look well on our species, because in our species, the men have taken over and are kind of like by brute force. And yet we have this like thing that goes back to insects or flowers, where we're like, women, am I right? Like they fucking can't live with them, can't live without them. You know, it's like, that's how we, it's like, you get in a locker room and you objectify women and you feel better as a man. The unspoken subtext is, yeah, it's about time. Like, these fucking goddesses and monsters, like, they run, you know, they control us.
Well, the subtext is, entitlement, because it's feeling that I deserve to have a woman, and I deserve to have a woman that I want, you know, and I should have her. I should have the woman, the kind of woman that I want.
I mean, you can hear it, like, yeah, it's just like, it's not even oozing. It's like all it is in that guy's manifesto that he videotaped before he shot up the campus or whatever. Like he, it's like, he's not even, it's not even buried under layers. He's
it's out in the open.
A crazy opportunity to actually open the hood on misogyny and see where the air cleaner is and where the carburetor is, because he's just plain and simple saying like, I work so hard to be fuckable, and these women won't fuck me, and that's not fair.
Yeah, even though I'm clearly a creep and a misogynist, shockingly, women don't find that attractive about me, and I'm fucking pissed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We didn't have to go to the gender place because it's like, I just been kind of fascinated with that lately. Obviously, our country is going through a fucking
palpitation. We should talk about it because, you know, that's the other category that I occupy. I'm a wonderful twofer.
Okay.
People who want to hire more diversity on their staff. I'm a twofer.
That is true.
So there you have it.
I will say you were not hired for your race.
Good, I'm glad.
Yeah. We definitely wanted to fill that vagina quota. No, we didn't. No, we weren't. We just got more female submissions, just to make clear to the...
But here's the thing. I think that you do have to be honest about the fact that it does take more effort. If you want to hire more female writers, it does take extra effort because you have to tell the reps, the agents who submit people, you have to tell them, like, I want female writers to be submitted, because otherwise they look at Rick and Morty. First of all, they always front load with male writers unless they're like staffing a show like Sex and the City that's like all women, you know, but like, meaning like the cast is all women. But, you know, for a show like Rick and Morty, an agent is going to be like, oh, I know, I'm going to submit a white dude who's a nerd. Like, that's who is going to get submitted. And you as a showrunner have to say to them, no, I want you to submit women too, or else they just won't do it, because they're just trying to hedge their bets on who's most likely to get hired. And, you know, like, it's a disservice to women to say that, like, oh, women just happen to be the women who were submitted just happen to be the best writers, because the implication is that in previous seasons, none of the women who were submitted were good, and you're discounting whether or not even any women were even submitted at all. You have to make an effort, is what I'm saying.
We didn't. I mean, we're talking about Rick and Morty. I, as far as I understand it, the objective truth is that there were little to zero female written submissions for the first two seasons. First season, no one knew the show existed. Second season, there were probably, for because of what you're talking about, front loading or just nobody thinking about it. The momentum is just like, okay. And also tiny writing staff and a bunch of friends that we could name off the top of our head that we finally have a show we're hiring people on, and oh my god, we're gonna go with this person first, and guess what, they're a guy. Third season, and it's the thing that happened between the two seasons was like, there, I think we talked about this on this podcast, but like, it's kind of an interesting story because someone brought it up in a LA Times interview, and Justin and I made some jokes, and then we and said, like, look, no, the truth is we don't get any submissions that are female. And two things happened. One was a bunch of dudes tweeting me and saying that I'm part of the problem because I'm making jokes about it in the LA Times instead of solving the problem in the LA Times. and the other thing that happened is a bunch of women got their scripts submitted to Rick and Morty. I don't know if it was their agents or if it was them saying to their agents, like, dude, look in the paper. They're saying, where are the women? And you didn't submit me last time. Submit me. Or was it agents going like, oh, fucking, hey, you want women? I got women. Whatever the case, all of a sudden change happened at the place in the pipeline where like the least amount of change can accomplish the most, which is submission, agencies, representation. And now all of a sudden we had, I believe, a shit ton of representation gender wise in our submissions. And truthfully, it sounds like something I'm making up to sound like we're impressive, and but like we really went with the people that we wanted the most, and they were women, and we ended up with an accidentally balanced room.
Yeah, I just think it's important to specify that, like, that doesn't mean that the first two seasons an equal amount of women submitted and they just weren't good enough.
Right.
That it's that people, like, I mean, this is something that people outside of the industry don't ever even know to think about, and people inside of the industry don't think about very much unless they're women, which is that, like, you don't realize that there are levels of gatekeeping, and agents are a level of gatekeeping. And if the agents aren't submitting women to a certain job, like, obviously it's going to be harder and near impossible for women to be hired on that staff if they're not being submitted. And I just think that that's very important to specify and say, tell people, because I don't think people think about stuff like that.
But what do the people listening do as a result of that? I mean, I think that my responsibility is to say, as I say to casting directors, if I'm making a show and it's live action, I now say to the casting director, I want to make sure we make a genuine effort to these are race neutral roles, and I want to take that extra effort required to make sure we don't accidentally cast a bunch of white people. I say that out loud, and they go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I say, but seriously, and I say it again, and it's because it's casting. There's this momentum within the industry, and then we do it. We make an effort because you.
Yeah, and I think that that's one of the. It's evident in like Community, because Community had one of the most diverse like. Main casts ever, you know?
Right, and you're watching me learn to do it there along with the Russo brothers, like, as we go. Like, and Russ Krasnoff was, like, he was very helpful. Like, you know, we all kind of collaborated on that goal, these four white guys, like, going, like, how do we make sure this happens? And then we figured out a system and did it. And now the new way is, yeah, it's just, you just have that conversation at the top of your show. And so with writers, especially in animation, where the casting isn't really that, is less of an issue, it's a different ball of wax. This is something I haven't done, I don't think, is say to the agencies, make sure you send me women and try to send me an equal amount of both, but like, just send me your best people. But like, next, so now we get to this divergent flowchart thing. So a man is listening to this, and he's a broke writer, and he's hearing me say, so you're saying that you have the best show on TV that everyone wants to write for, and because you're woke and a cuck and a libtard, you're telling CAA to send to mitigate their normal function of sending the best writers with this agenda of making sure half of the scripts are written by women.
Yes, but that agent, when at CAA, when told, send me the best writers for this show, what is the image that they're going to conjure?
Right.
They're not going to conjure me, a fucking Asian woman. Right. You know, they're going to think, okay, this is a show created by two white dudes who love like nerdy shit. I'm going to pick all of my clients who are white dudes into nerdy shit, because that's who these two guys are going to be respond to.
Yeah. And I would say to that guy who's listening and thinking that, like, I was you when I was 24, and here's some things I've learned. Everyone's a hack. Like, there are so few talented writers, and a lot of them are women, and they are harder to find and harder to get submitted because of what Jessica just said, but also just more in general, like, it's a fucking crapshoot with all writers, no matter how good their script might even appear to be or how good they are in a meeting. And so you may as well find out like who's talented and who's not by hiring them. Like, that's where I diverge even with all of my colleagues, no matter how racist, misogynist or whatever they are. Like, because I'm just like, I'm so high and mighty that I'm just like, fucking writers suck. All of them suck. They all turn out to suck. Like, I don't care where you went to college or what your writing credits are. Your script is fake. Like, you that's not your real Modern Family script. The fucking staff wrote it for you, and you're using it as your writing sample, and you're a fucking liar, and et cetera, et cetera. Or your spec's really good, but it took you 9 months to write, and you crack under pressure. You got your friends to punch up your jokes. Like, you can't tell from writing samples, and you can't tell from sitting down with people. So that's where like my narcissism is makes it easier for me to be progressive, because I'm like, who fucking cares? Might as well make them half women. Like, for all the fucking change it's going to make in my ability to get a good show done. That's the God's honest truth in my heart. If there were three good writers that were all looking for work, who were fucking demonstrably great at what they did, like that. It would be because it was some kind of fucking crazy high tide miracle of timing. There's nobody's getting bumped off of the list because of a quota is my headline of that. Like, the list isn't long enough for making sure representation is part of it to actually eliminate anyone that would otherwise have made your show good.
Yeah, you're not going to not hire someone for the sake of diversity.
Yeah, I would never do that. Like, I'm kind of dreading season 4 of Rick and Morty's process because we didn't go out of our way to have a gender balanced writer's room, and we shouldn't go out of our way to do it for season 4, and we may not.
I mean, I think you should make an effort.
We should make an effort.
You should make an effort to be like, I want to see submissions by women and, you know, like people of color and like LGBT people. Like, I want you to submit people like that, and then you can judge after that. But I think it is important for you to tell reps, like, I want you to not just send me white guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we definitely... we will be saying that, but then the reason I'm dreading it is because I know, like I'm not gonna, if it comes down to that choice, then I think that's what the guy that's listening to this is worried about. Like, when it comes down to some choice between talent and fulfilling some quota.
Yeah, but the point I'm trying to make is they're not mutually exclusive. It's about access and opportunity, you know, because it's like, if you look, like, my original spec is about a Chinese family that run like a real estate office. Like, somebody who read that would never think like, oh, let's submit that girl for, let's, you know, let's submit that person using this script for Rick and Morty. They wouldn't think that, you know. They wouldn't make that connection. But if you'd said, no, I want you to make an effort to submit women and people of color, then maybe they would think, they might think like, you know what? Like, I didn't think of this person initially, but like, I think even though the subject matter she covers isn't the same, but the humor like works, you know?
Yeah.
Cause like when I met you, like, I feel like you and I like kind of like jived on like humor like right away, but like I don't know if you just look at like on paper like what like the subject matter that I chose to write about, like if somebody would have to make that connection.
You wrote I didn't. I could tell. Justin did, and probably Ridley did, or something.
Yeah.
And
I told those guys,
I was like, I'm not reading shit because my accuracy at hiring good writers is 50-50. You might as well flip a coin, whether I read their scripts or not. And I just thought, and Justin was going to have this retreat and have candidates show up, so I was like, I'll just meet the people, like. Like, I mean, that sounds like I always thought that sounded like a nightmare when I'd hear about those South Park retreats and stuff. And it's like, oh my God, as a human being that was like on that block getting judged or whatever, I'd be like, I would never survive and I would hate it and I would probably avoid it and all this stuff. But it's like, if we can really get away with that, then let's just do it. Yeah. And I did. It was your dryness and your way you spoke, like suggested to me. I was like, your sense of humor, your the amount of funny things you said per minute in a conversation, that I was like, this person's on the top of my list because I don't really even care if they like if their script it sucks, because it doesn't really matter. It's like, we're going to be a room and we're going to be like talking about story points and like what things should happen that would be funnier than this or that, and this person is a person that is going to be helpful to me.
And then if you recall that first night, I got a fever and basically had a fever the entire retreat.
Oh God, I forgot about that. Yeah, it's a miracle that you, that's how good I assumed you were, because
I was so sure that I like made such a terrible impression, because the first night I had this, I came down with a fever and basically spent the next 2 days like in bed like shivering.
Yeah, but that gave me permission. I was like, well, then I can play Minecraft. Obviously, the name of the game here isn't impressing people with your song and dance. So I'll just go play Minecraft in my rented bedroom. All right. Well, how long have we been
gabbing?
So
I feel like, I feel like this feels like a logical stopping point.
So I like that last week we said, let's talk about that Confederacy show. And we talked about it and we hit a fucking thing where I was like, you know what? Oh, wait a minute. Again, wasn't a resolution, but it was like in therapy when I just like there's a muscle I didn't know I had tensed up, just like,
yeah,
let's go.
Yeah,
and I'm
oh, we're gonna cover this next time.
Yeah.
This episode is special because after this we're gonna release it, right? We're gonna things.
Yeah, so yeah, and I kind of do you have any feel, like, I don't know, it's not important that the show be like au courant, right? Like, we don't, I mean, we're smart to banking stuff is the practical way to do this, but also just like all, it's like,
well, racism is always au courant.
I'm not used to this thing where it's like we're talking to people that are hearing us 3 weeks from now. It just feels.
Yeah, I mean, I guarantee racism will still be around 3 weeks.
I know,
from now.
But what if?
But what if it wasn't?
I don't know. It just it's like, well, what if this HBO show comes out and is fantastic? I don't. What if the Confederacy wins the Civil War II? I don't know. I don't know what I'm worried about. It's just not my. It's not my usual style. I've never done this, so maybe I should just do.
But we're only banking three, and then we're gonna release it, so it's not that behind.
Yeah. Okay, well, all right. Well, let me take one more crack at the theme song. Okay.
I hope this conversation has inspired you for more lyrics.
I think this was it. Whiting your wongs can be fun together. White man, Chinese woman, still birds of a feather. No color is so different that you should be racist. We're talking about race from a screenwriting basis. Stupid. Right, maybe really we'll great. Pull that and for now as a
that one was really great.
Brought to you by MeUndies, I'm assuming. I don't know. See you next time.
All right, bye.
It's a good show.